Good morning, all. It's another beautiful day. Your attention, please.
Welcome again to Back in the Village, The Prisoner podcast, where we cover all 17 episodes of the British sci-fi classic, The Prisoner. No notes this week, but I want to apologize because there's something funky going on with my mic track this week. I don't know if it's something in the connection or if I just kept turning away from the mic or something. My mic game might be a little off. It's the first time in the studio for a couple weeks. So I apologize. I tried to do the best that I could to make the soft parts loud. Also, we're going to be off next week, so no show next week. We'll be back in 2 weeks. So that's about it. So enjoy Checkmate. Good morning, good morning. Welcome back to Back in the Village, the Prisoner podcast. And we're actually back in the studio this week because... All of the snow has finally, well, most of the snow has dissipated. So.
Yeah, we're down to like a foot of snow. Yeah. So we're actually here with our little pop guards and the microphones and everything sitting in a living room.
We're sitting in Wes's living room, who is with me again. Wes, how
are
you doing?
Good, Clay. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Today we're covering episode 9, I think.
Yes. That
Checkmate.
Sounds right. Checkmate. Okay.
Yes. I win. So, I actually, before we do anything, I wanted to get into some listener mail, which is a first for us.
We got feedback this week outside of Twitter.
We did. We got a great email from Jonathan and his son, TK, who have been listening to the show.
Living over in sunny Japan?
I think.
Yeah.
I think so. But he sent over some great bits of trivia and insight, but the one thing he mentioned that I wanted to talk about was he mentioned that... Patrick McGoohan himself said the origin of the "be seeing you" sign, the hand sign,
where they say when they say hello or goodbye,
right?
Basically.
The okay over the eye downward chop thing. When he was asked about the origin of that, he said it was a greeting that ancient Christians used to give to each other. Sort of, you know, it's supposed to be sort of like the
sign of the fish.
Yeah, the sign of the fish.
So. He said that McGoohan had told this to an... It's sort of like a four levels of someone saying... Sorry, the actress said that McGoohan had told her while they were shooting.
Right, it's kind of an apocryphal story.
Right, that this is where it came from.
And I did a little bit of research on it to see if I could find anything, and
Google Foo. Yeah.
I found a few references to people actually claiming otherwise, that that's actually not the case. And I couldn't find anything that said it concretely outside of that one story.
Because that story's on the wiki.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
About
it's
the
on
village.
The village wiki, yeah.
I mean, we know that the sign of the fish obviously exists because you see it on bumper stickers
right.
and stuff.
Right.
I did a little bit of Google stuff, too, and I couldn't find anything that distinctly said that it used to be an ancient greeting.
Mm-hmm.
And not to say that McGoohan wasn't telling tall tales when he was talking about this, but we thought it was funny because it came up at the time when Leonard Nimoy just died.
Oh,
and
right,
the Vulcan hand symbol for live long and prosper is like a Jewish hand symbol. It's a letter or something in the Jewish alphabet.
Yeah, and I... The main difference between the two is the Vulcan symbol is something he actually witnessed,
right?
In practice,
yeah.
And I don't know where McGoohan could have figured out or found out that that symbol was an ancient Christian thing. The closest I could find was, I guess, crossed fingers was supposed to be a similar thing.
Of the cross.
I think it's supposed to be like the sort of the fish. Sort
oh,
of
the
thing
fish
well,
tail. Oh, okay,
the
fish.
Same,
yeah, right.
But I couldn't find any instances of the okay thing. But you know, who knows? It could possibly. It's an interesting thing to think about. Assuming that that's true, I don't know how that fits into the story so much. I mean,
no, or the the mythos of anything.
Because given what it represents in the show, it's kind of a counterpoint to what the whole point of it is.
Yeah, I just see it as a, it's like a camera eye. Yeah. Like, you're always being watched, basically, when they do it to each other. That's the interpretation I take away from it. There's no, like, religious underpinning in my, like, there's no religious underpinning in the show, really.
Generally, no.
Nothing specifically.
But yeah, no, it's an interesting thing to think about, and I, you know, these things, much like the Vulcan salute, it's really interesting to find out where these things come from, because it's generally from a source outside of whatever it is you're dealing with. You know, it's not another sci-fi thing. Like the heavy metal horns is something that Ronnie James Dio's grandmother used to do. It's the sign of the evil eye. Oh, he just thought it looked cool, so he started doing it, and now it's a phenomenon.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's the stuff that sort of pulls it from reality seems a little bit cool. It seems more grounded, weird way. Like the Vulcan thing seems to make sense, and the Nimoy had a lot to do with that. Like the you know, the neck pinch was because he didn't want to punch people. Right. He's kind of the opposite of McGowan, so
he
just invented this. He's like, what if I squeeze them on the neck and they fall down? But yeah, and McGowan's a little camera eye symbol that we can't seem to disprove that he came up with the idea, because he seems to be sticking to that, you know. Whatever his genesis for that idea is.
Yeah, no, it's definitely interesting, you know, regardless. It's an interesting thing to think about. But thank you for that email, Jonathan and TK. Thank you for listening.
Yeah.
And
he had one other good point that I don't want to talk about. He gave the episodes that McGowan said were the only ones that really matter. His clash listing of the episodes.
Right.
Which we probably won't talk about now, but I did want to just mention to him that I thought that was interesting.
I think at some point when we finish, we can go back and talk about...
Revisit that.
Yeah, revisiting order and, you know, if we have personalized order. We'll definitely touch on that then.
Yeah, just to clarify, the person wrote in just saying McGowan had listed the 7 episodes that he considered the only important ones.
Yeah, kind of the canon.
Yeah, the storyline, the backbone to the story.
And one of those is the episode we're talking about today, is Checkmate.
Ooh, nice segue.
Thank you.
Do you play chess, sir? Yes. Come and join me.
Just to break it down quickly, the general plot of this is number 6 finally follows through on his campaign promises from Free For All,
mm-hmm.
and tries to figure out who are the prisoners and who are the warders.
Right.
And he does that through a little bit of psychology that's given to him by a master chess player. Which is basically that you can tell who is who by the way their attitude towards you. And so he puts together this little group of people that he's determined to be prisoners and not warders. And they have hatched this plot and build a radio and try to signal a boat. And once they unfurl their plan, 6 makes it out to this boat, only to find out that the boat is... belongs to the village, and he has been turned in by one of his prisoner pals because they think that he is in charge and the whole thing is a test. So whereas he is trying to trust other people, those people do not trust him. So it's a little bit of a flip of the way it goes.
Yeah,
that's pretty much the entire story.
Yeah,
they really hacky, lame, hypnotic love plot in there, but we'll talk about that as well. So what did you think of this one?
Let's see. Well, since we just mentioned that it's on this list of McGowan's top episodes, I enjoyed it,
mm-hmm.
and I thought that it fits after someone before this. Dance of the Dead. I think it fits with Dance of the Dead in that it should be an early episode.
Yes, definitely.
And it's not in the order we're watching. So I think my negatives for it come from the fact of where I've seen it in placement of the episodes.
Yeah, I have the same feeling. This episode was shot apparently back-to-back with Dance of the Dead and was one of the other alternate second episodes. So it was, as I mentioned last week, there was 3 episodes that they considered to be episode number 2. Dance of the Dead, Checkmate, and I think Free For All was the other one. And so I think those were all kind of going concurrently. The idea being whichever one was done first, or I don't know. And Dance of the Dead obviously got shelved. Mm-hmm. Checkmate, I don't know why it didn't end up going second. And even Free For All didn't end up going second either, because Chimes of Big Ben was number two.
Yes.
And I think that's really interesting, because it, especially in the body of this episode, there seems to be a lot of things that I feel like you would address or deal with early on, like they hadn't been really pinned down, details and stuff.
Yes, that's kind of the... We're hitting, same with Dance of the Dead. We're hitting Dance of the Dead, and this one are like fundamentally important bits of information that are coming really late in the episode order that we're watching.
Right.
Like the fact, like this one really clarifies the other people in the village. Like what they're sort of like, what the trick is behind them. Like he's unsure how many of them are guards and how many of them are truly prisoners.
Right.
And so this show shows that there is that kind of schism, which would be helpful information because it it explains why he's always getting caught, sort of, because he's running into this problem.
Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of like a fundamental thing that I would have appreciated earlier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it actually addresses some of the things we've talked about before in why you can't really have six have allies.
Yes.
Because you would get into the situation that you have in this episode. I mean, so, yeah, I think if this goes early, then it makes a lot more sense because clearly at the end of this episode, he gets burned to an extent.
Yes.
By trusting other people that that would probably put him off.
Yeah, well it's funny. It's not even him trusting other people. He's ultimately undone because of the one thing he cherishes. Like, his individuality is what causes him to get caught because he's basically like sort of an arrogant dick. Like, he sort of seizes control of the situation.
That's right. Yeah.
And it's because he's thinking outside the box that the other prisoners think he must be a guard because he's acting the way he tells the people that guards are not. Is if you're a guard and he asks you a question and they get arrogant or like cocky back to him, he goes, "You're a guard." Mm. And if they're like the broken prisoners, they just go, "Okay, I'll show you like my book," so what like the shopkeeper does.
Right.
So the end is flipped around where one of his friends betrays him because he thought that number six was a guard because of the way he was acting to him.
Right.
So it's sort of his ultimate character flaw, or like what the show is trying to say is his one strength actually comes back and undoes everything he did.
Right. And I like it because it presents to six this idea that he is no different from the people that he feels like he's an individual, but he's acting to everybody else. He's acting the same way that these guards act.
You're right. Yep.
And it's for someone whose personality is that of bucking the system to then find out that you are acting the same way the system acts.
Yep.
It can be, you know, pretty damaging.
No, and it was a huge save of an ending that I was like, this is going to be a terrible, stupid ending, and it actually saved it.
Yeah.
Because I can sort of understand why McGoohan only wanted to, I guess there's different takes now that I'm starting to read about the information on the internet, like how many episode orders they wanted to put in.
Mm-hmm.
But it makes a lot more sense just if McGoohan wanted to do seven.
Mm-hmm.
Because already we're starting to run into the thing of stuff is happening and I'm watching it and I'm like, well, it's going to flip on him. Like, right. Someone is going to screw him over. And it's like you're kind of limited just because the show only has one sort of direction it wants to go in. It's not like it's a genre show where you can, like an X-Files, where you can have like a different monster of the week every episode and like last out of it.
Yeah.
This one is basically him just wanting to escape, and he can't escape. So someone has to screw him over.
Right.
And at the end of the episode, when he gets on the boat, it's like, oh, it's going to be a trap. Oh, mm-hmm. It was a trap. Oh, but that's kind of neat why it was a trap. Like, that kind of saved the ending.
Yeah, the thing, well, to kind of counter that a little bit, I think one of the things that bugged me about this episode, again, I think it's all a placement issue, but was that I feel like one of the things the show actually does well is when it gets away from just the straight up he's gonna, because this is the third episode we've watched where he tries to escape by a boat.
Yes.
You know,
the water's playing a big right. There's some kind of symbolism.
And this time he didn't have to build anything, he just had an inflatable raft. I'm not sure where he got that, but yeah. But it's like, I enjoy the show when it goes away from that. When I'm not that I don't enjoy it when it does those, but
yep.
You know, at this point, 9 episodes in, when you've seen one failed, straight up failed escape, one successful escape, but then having the rug pulled out from under him,
yeah,
you know, all sorts of weird psychological things, different invasive things going on. To have at this point just another episode where he tries to escape by the water, but he blows it or he gets
right.
screwed over. It just, I don't know. It felt that plus some other things in the episode made it feel kind of like Prisoner Light.
That was a good move, wasn't it?
I know a better one.
Oh?
Away from this place.
Well, that's impossible.
But Chessmen, not for me.
They told me there wasn't a hope.
I don't believe what they tell me. You're surprised?
My general overall take is like I thought it was very strong. I wouldn't say it was like a transcendent mm-hmm. type goodness to it, but it was I thought it was almost like everything about the prisoner distilled down to like a sort of standard television episode
mm-hmm.
kind of,
mm-hmm.
and I appreciated that in mm-hmm. a way. I enjoyed it for. I really like the fact that he was in the village and you saw the village. I feel there are a lot of episodes where they don't really do that.
Mm.
And I think it's an interesting enough setting where they could stay there for a lot more episodes than they actually do. It was just something I noticed that I thought was funny that they don't spend a lot of time with the village and the people in the village.
Yeah, the village is always there. It's always a character. But it's not always a lead character.
Yeah.
And this episode was definitely one where they really, you get to see a lot more of what goes on there.
Yep.
Specifically, you get to see what people do for recreation
yeah.
in one of the more iconic and recognizable sequences from the show, the chess game that uses real people as the chess pieces.
Is that where this came from, that trope? Is this...
You know, I don't know. In the episode, I think Six asks why they use real people, and the woman who plays the queen says that it's a holdover from what old monarchy used to do or something like
oh,
that.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I think. I could be misremembering that, but I think that's what she says. And,
It's funny because it's just sort of redundant. Like they're playing a chessboard, and then the people out on the field are just sort of mimicking because the butler is moving the
right.
pieces on the actual board,
right?
And they're just sort of out there. But yeah, because I feel like that's a trope that happens a lot. The people
yeah, I've
as
definitely
like
seen that in other places.
Yeah, so I mean, this one is early enough where I figured it might have actually been the start of
it's
that.
It's very
situation.
Possible. Yeah. yeah. I like that. I really like that sequence because you do get I think they speak to it a little bit in the sequence, but you get this another great bit of kind of underhanded control from the village where you have this game that the people are playing
mm-hmm.
that is an illusion of power, and the people on the board have the illusion of actually actively being involved in something, but they're still just pieces in a game.
Yeah, literally pawns.
Yeah.
No, it's probably the best metaphor the show has done so far. It's not too heavy-handed. It's obvious, but it's not. He doesn't go out of his way to be like, we're all pawns in this game of
like
the
they
village.
Do in the first episode.
Right. Yes.
I think that was another thing that kind of bothered me because I think. So, okay, let's just get into what my issues with the episode.
Mm-hmm.
It feels so. This episode was written by a guy named Gerald Kelsey, directed by Don Chaffee, who is a veteran director of the show. I think he did like 5 or 6 episodes or something, mm-hmm. a lot of the good ones. And it was and it feels like an episode that was written after someone had just seen the pilot, because clearly that's what it was. Because they, you know, like I said, it was one of the episodes they were. Producing to be episode number 2.
Sort of front-loaded everything.
Right. And I feel like the stuff they do in this episode is kind of...
Like a retread?
A retread, and it's kind of like a surface level grasp of what the show ends up doing.
Right.
So, for instance, they have at one during the chess game, the guy who plays the rook decides to move out of turn and walks all the way down the board and just yells checkmate.
Yeah,
and
shows very weak understanding of the rules of chess. Yeah.
And clearly, that's breaking the rules of the game,
right?
Which is, you know, a larger metaphor for standing out and breaking the rules of the village.
Yeah, doing your own thing.
So he gets taken away to the medical bay,
which we've seen,
and we know that nothing good comes out of that.
Yep.
And he's given this sort of re-education kind of thing, and they bring number six in to watch. For reasons that I can't, they always do that, and it's always good, but yeah. It's always like, why would you bring six in to, I don't know, that is,
just to show him what you're going to get this, although right. they always end those scenes with just being, we can't do that to him because he's so important.
Yeah. And in this scene, what they do is they have this sort of, they reference Pavlov, but they don't explain that at all, which
right.
is, you know,
common knowledge.
Yeah. And they have this Pavlovian test setup where the rook awakes out of a drug-induced sleep where he's been artificially dehydrated, so he's desperate for water.
Yeah.
And in front of him is four or five water jugs. And if he touches the jug before being allowed to touch it, he's electrocuted.
Yep.
And so he does that once or twice.
Which is not really Pavlovian, yeah. So I don't know.
No, I couldn't really figure out the exact... you know, analog there, but and you know he does it once, and that it's a very quick scene because he electrocutes himself once, and they're like, no, okay, now you can have the
now
water.
Drink it,
and then he drinks it, and number two's like, see, that worked, he's gonna fall in line perfectly now. And it's like that scene I feel like is it almost felt like Prisoner fan fiction.
Yes,
like, you know, because it's a really, I don't know, I thought it was kind of not really inventive and kind of lame, and it's a very short scene, and I don't know, it, like, compared to the other thing, like in Chimes of Big Ben, they do something kind of similar where they have Nadia in a room with a floor with a pulsing electric current.
Yeah.
And so they're drilling her with questions, and she has the option to either answer the questions or try and figure out the electric current on the floor and make it, you know, so it's right. It's a lot more twisted and weird.
Yes.
And what she does there speaks more to the character and to her character than this one does, where it's just like 30 seconds of kind of, oh, that's kind of a weird thing.
Yeah.
That's a weird test to way to brainwash, you know, that kind of thing. And I don't know, it just felt like it was not as good as the show has been in the past.
Yeah, it's just, it's not very, it's not even super high stakes to, like, he's exceptionally thirsty.
Yeah.
The guys, I figure at the amount of, like, they were going over the, like, how dehydrated he was, I'd be like, he probably has bigger problems than just, like, yeah. He probably has, like, brain salt damage or something at this point, as opposed to just being, like, super thirsty. And the cruelest part was the tiny little cup they gave him. It's like, you need to give him more water. He's too thirsty.
From now on, he'll be fully cooperative.
I'm glad. He's given me a lot of trouble.
Your troubles are only just beginning.
I think the other interesting thing about this episode that we've never really dealt with before, and I think speaks to a bit of what works and what doesn't in the show and with the concept, is we get a lot of... we spend more time in the control room in this episode than we do in any other episode that I can, you know, that we've seen thus far anyway.
Yeah.
And number two is in it for not that much of the episode.
Well, they kind of have they do a weird thing with number two that I noticed. They make up this doctor character that I didn't understand her purpose for existing. It was like, why don't you just make this number two's thing?
Right. Like, and that was another thing too. Like her character seemed very unrefined for the show, because her character was just, where number two is like, well, you know, we got to take our time. That doctor here is like, no, I'm going to break this guy now. I don't
right.
care how.
All the other doctors have been subservient and are just sort of like mad scientist types that the twos allow to do things or not. And she seemed like she was running the show. And the number two was just like, yeah, whatever. Like, let me know. I'm going to go put my gi on.
She seems like the character of Scott Evil in Austin Powers.
Yeah, yeah.
Where when Dr. Evil is setting up the elaborate trap, Scott Evil's like, why don't you, I have a gun in my room.
Let me go.
We can just go shoot them together. The doctor is kind of like, I don't know. Why don't we just break this guy in half? I can do. We'll be done before lunch.
I got the chemicals in my lab. Just let me go out and get them.
But yeah, we get a lot of screen time from her and number two, who's played by a guy named Peter Wingard, who I think is a pretty well known British actor at that point. I think he was on the Avengers and all that kind of stuff. He doesn't get a lot of screen time. I actually kind of liked his number two.
Yeah.
Because he plays the village as though it's like a spa, kind of.
Yeah, yeah.
In the short time we get with him, the first interaction between Six and number two, he's kind of like, no, it's fine. You know what? If you feel like you're ready to go, we have all sorts of chemical things we can do to you that'll let you just easily tell us what we want. Totally medically sound,
yep.
No problems. Just let us know when you want to do it.
Yeah, he's like the hippest and laid back. You can tell because he's got gigantic sideburns.
Yeah.
he's a laid back, smooth mother.
Yeah, and I mean, in most of the episode is seen through the nurse and through the control room, even to the point where when stuff goes wrong, they have to like call number two,
yep.
And tell him what. Like number two doesn't give a shit about what Six is doing in this episode.
No, he really doesn't. Yeah, it's. I sort of agree with what you're saying. Is like there's a lot of sort of odder things that once you mention that it feels like it's someone just watched the pilot and it's just like they had like a deadline where like I'll just copy a lot of the ideas here and stick them in. Number two's sort of weakness in terms of the role is there, and I mean I was so let down that you put him in a karate gi and he does not. I was expecting, you know, when they all go in at the end to his place and they tie him up.
Yeah.
I was expecting the Palpatine gets arrested scene out of the Star Wars where he's like fighting in slow motion and they're all just getting knocked around, but it didn't happen. What was the point of that scene? Why was he in the karate gi?
I don't know. Because karate was hip at the time and just to show that he was hip.
I thought he was going to be on the boat and he was going to knock out number six.
Yeah.
And they'd be like, oh, okay,
you
that
know,
makes sense.
I don't.
What was the point of the skipper? He goes, number six goes, take me to the skipper. I need to see him. And then he walks in and a guy walks in and goes, I'm the skipper. Nice to meet you. And he just walks out. And then number two's on the screen. I was like, why isn't two the skipper?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think, I don't know. They needed to have that buffer between. Because I think the implication is that number two has been hip to six's plan the entire time. Right, because
I don't get
you
that.
You think the Rook turned him in at the end, or everybody else turned him in at the end?
I guess that's true. I got the impression that number two was clueless for a good portion, and then at the end he knew what was going on.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I guess you could argue that just by saying maybe the Rook was like at a conflict of character or something. You know, like he didn't know whether he should turn him in, and then he does.
Yeah, I'm not sure because I think.
When's the first point they see the boat? That's when they build the radio, right?
They see the boat when the Rook... They make contact with the boat after they build the radio.
Yeah, so he must have told them pretty early. He must... Because the boat has always been a part of the village's plot.
Yeah.
So I guess it makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can't you get me audio?
The mic's kaput. Electric chuck's on its way.
Do you think he's fixed it?
I'd take bets on it.
But yeah, I think... Spending so much time in the control room and with the nurse and stuff grounds the village in a way that I don't really like because we spend more time with the village repair crew in this episode than we have ever and I think ever do again. It's like they're
making the rounds.
Yeah, it's most a lot of it is just the guy in the control room who is not the bald guy with the glasses.
He's
a different guy. Just being like, damn it. We got a light out and number 14. Can we get a guy over there? Somebody turned out the camera. I don't know what's going on. And then Super Mario shows up to fix everything.
He looked exactly like Super Mario. I thought that too. But it's I know what you're talking about. Like it grounded. Like in previous episodes, I've gotten the impression that you can't knock out the cameras because they're just omnipresent and you're always going to be watched.
Yeah.
And in this one, he just knocks out the camera. And it was also a weird design room and the control room where the spinny thing occasionally gets in your way when you're trying to watch the view screen.
Oh, yeah. Every now and then it just kind of comes into frame.
It's like, couldn't we have built this a little bit better so that this guy doesn't always interfere with what I'm looking at? I just thought it was dumb that they could knock out the camera.
Yeah. And like...
But also the scene where they start spying on the Rook and number six talking.
Mm-hmm.
How did they know when to start talking about stuff that the village can hear?
Okay, so I was watching that, and I thought the same thing. And he changes what... Six changes what he's saying from talking about
escape plan
to talking about chess. When the statue behind him turns to look at them.
Oh, really?
But the thing is, though... They go back to talking about the escape plan
and
with
still...
no reference to anything. So, if they had just held in for 30 more seconds, they would have been like, "Oh shit, he's trying to escape."
It's a good try.
But yeah, like, and so the other thing that made it feel really grounded was when Six gathers all his escape buddies together,
yeah.
And they're like, "Oh, we've got visual, but I don't know, the microphone must be blown out." It's like, that's really weird.
Yeah.
Like you said, an omnipresent, always watching thing for you to follow like the repair crew has to fix all like the transistors that blow and stuff.
Get that boom mic out of the shot.
Yeah. It's weird. It just grounds it to a reality that I don't really like.
I'm torn because I liked it being grounded, but I didn't like them just sort of making it look like they could be incompetent and be like, "Oh, the fucking camera is down." It's like, I'd prefer seeing the like machinations that they're doing, but I don't need the cameras to break and like to allow Six to have these opportunities where he can just freely talk about stuff.
Right.
It'd be the same with like just sort of the boat thing and just like how it all works behind the scenes and the doctor who seems to be the real lead here. It's just kind of I think that's what made it seem more traditional TV in a way, which I kind of like, because I do like that sort of like soothing, you know, what's happening, or like you get to know these characters in a way that previously you can't. But I guess that's also the problem with it.
Very ingenious. Hypnosis.
Quite. When he's out of sight, she'll be sighing. When she sees him, her pulses will quicken. And if she thinks she's going to lose him, if he attempts to escape, she'll be frantic. And her overwhelming emotions will send an alarm to control.
Good.
And another way it feels like more traditional TV, and there's another thing that I don't like about it, is this is the first episode, I think, that has a seeming, like, actually has, like, a B-plot to it, sort of.
The woman?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The woman who plays the queen on the chessboard.
It's interesting that those two don't have numbers, too. I guess it's for clarity's sake.
They do.
Oh, they do?
She is number 8.
Oh.
But they refer to her and the other guy as the Rook and the Queen. She kind of tries to strike up a friendship with Six when they're playing chess. And number 2 and the Doctor, mainly the Doctor. That's another thing. Number 2 is kind of oblivious to this until the Doctor brings this in.
Yeah.
She brings the Queen in. And it's like, "Look, I've hypnotized her. We can make her do whatever we want. But you know what we're going to do? We're going to have her fall so in love with number 6 that we will be able to track her heartbeat because of a transistor we have on a necklace."
It's a great Rush song.
Follow me through my heartbeat. Wow.
There's a transistor in my radio. It's goofy, and the like,
it's so sitcom-y.
The pulse thing, and apparently she just dies when he's not around because like there's no pulse. Like the heartbeat just stops when she can't see him.
It's so like gratuitous.
Mm-hmm.
It has nothing to do... The only reason that whole thing... The only part of the plot that affects is when Six and the Rook are building their radio.
Yeah.
The Rook is like, "Shh, we need another transistor. I know where we're going to get one." And then
Six
finds the transistor in her necklace. And then after that point, she's never seen again.
That the entire episode. He somehow knows it's a transistor before he's told by the electronics expert that it's a...
Yeah.
Because he just wants the necklace.
It looked to me like a waffle with some silly putty on it.
The guy's building a radio that's the size of like a boombox, you know, like enormous. And for some reason, the technology for the transistor can just be, or a transponder can just be a little tiny necklace with a heart with his picture. And it just gave him an opportunity to be excessively cruel to a woman. And he's like, we need more plots like this that can happen.
Maybe his whole thing towards women is just, you know, this is a look into that, because in his regular life, ladies are all over him to the point where he's sick of it. And he just doesn't want to deal with them right now.
They had sex, right? Why is he wearing his bathrobe?
She broke into the house. I thought that at first, too. When he comes out and he's like, what are you doing here?
Oh, I thought she spent the night.
No, I don't think so. I think because he comes out and he's like kind of not really saying anything. And then he's like, what are you doing here? Or like, how did you get in? And she's like, I just came in through the door. I thought you might want some hot chocolate before bed.
Oh, I guess it's just his flat reaction. He never seems like he always just responds in his very curt sort of voice. And it's never like, you know, if any other actor would play that, I'd be like, what are you doing? Like, he's just like, oh, what are you doing here?
Yeah. But yeah, it's just like that plot is very, it's like a really hacky sci-fi thing.
Yeah.
It feels like a sitcom plot, you know?
Well, it doesn't particularly add anything besides supplying the necklace, which, and then she just disappears as soon as that's over.
Mm-hmm.
When they had gone through this whole thing of like, she was going to just start like screaming the minute he tried to leave the village. Yeah. Like that was supposed, he's like, she's supposed to be an alarm clock.
See that, you know, I guess there's a piece in there that could have been more interesting, because the whole thing with that plan is, it's like a really stupid roundabout way to handle this, but is to make her so in love with him that if he tries to escape, she will be so distraught that she will have no choice but to stop him.
Yeah, which is interesting.
Which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about tracking him by her heartbeat. That's kind of silly.
Yeah.
But there is kind of, you know, there's some interesting concept there that, I don't know if it's... I think it would be pretty low on my board of note cards of plot ideas. But.
Right. It's more of a good background idea.
Mm.
I'm trying to think of a way that you could have had a payoff better at the end, but it doesn't really.
Yeah.
I
mean, because if she ends up being the one to turn him over at the end, that's kind of stupid. It doesn't really do anything.
Yeah. You'd see that coming.
Yeah.
Like that's too obvious. Maybe you're supposed to, but I never thought that. Yeah. I never thought she would, because they drop the character immediately.
Yeah.
You're crazy.
Yes. About you.
You don't even know me.
Well, I know how I feel.
Who put you onto this?
Nobody. You doubt me.
It's easy, and I'm waterproof. A slight drizzle won't wash away my doubt, so don't try.
I don't want to be near you.
And everybody's near in this place, far too near.
Yeah, just sort of fascinating. His relationship with her was interesting, because he was... sort of dickish, and he was also really dickish when he at the very end, all the people helped him, and he's just like, I'm getting the fuck out of here, and he goes off by himself. I
couldn't really figure out,
was he gonna go back, or was he just saying like, there's no time to go back, I have to just leave?
I don't know why he dumped everybody else off at number two's place and then just went on the boat himself.
Right. He got like a message or something, didn't he? He was like, I have to go. Or did he see the boat?
Well, the raft came back and the Rook was not on it, because the Rook went out.
Went out first.
Yeah.
But the Rook was in the room with two. He tied up two, didn't he?
Yeah. In my mind, I'm thinking that the chain of events is the Rook goes out, doesn't come back, and then they go to the number two, and so then the Rook pops up and number two's off. But maybe I'm wrong. Because the Rook has to be there.
I thought he came back with everyone. The Rook helped tie up number two. Something came over the monitoring system that caused six to freak out, and he ran down to the beach. And that's when he found the boat. Oh. I think he might have seen... There might have been the boat mayday or something. It's weird that I can't remember, because I was so struck by the fact that he really just literally runs out of the room down the beach and gets out and paddles out into the ocean.
Just books it. forget these nerds.
Yeah, and left everybody who, up until this point, has been his only friends.
Yeah.
Without any sort of like qualms.
That's another thing. Okay, so like the point of this episode is that he, or one of the big things they do is that he finally meets people who he figures out he can trust, and then it turns into like sort of like an Ocean's 11 type thing.
Yes.
But they spent, it's like if you did Ocean's 11, but you spent the entire movie with the guy who refills the coins in the jack, like, or refills the chips on the blackjack.
Yeah. Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, it's, I don't know. There's just, I think the focus was off, and I like the ideas. I actually like the first half of the episode much more than the second half.
Yes, I don't think the ending's particularly great. And
yeah, well, I think once they get into the love thing,
yeah,
everything after that I could leave.
Do without.
You had a plan?
Everybody has a plan, but they all fail.
Why?
It's like the game. You have to learn to distinguish between the blacks and the whites.
I really liked the introduction of the chess master guy. I liked that character. I thought it would have been a lot more interesting to spend more time with him.
Yep.
Because
him and Six,
right,
shared their racist viewpoints of telling the blacks from the whites.
You know, it's very important you figure out the blacks from the whites. I liked him because they set him up in as you were saying before, you get more information about the other people in the village in this episode. See how
yes.
Were.
Everyone seems normal.
Yes, yeah.
Which has not been really what's happened in any episode prior to this one.
Was he
playing chess against somebody, or do we...
He was playing against...
Just some other guy who didn't talk?
Yeah.
Okay.
And you learn from... the queen tells number six that this chess master guy was like a count.
Yeah.
And I forget why he says he came to the village, but basically... he piques number six's interest immediately.
Yep.
Because the opening scene of the episode, which was actually a scene I really liked, was everybody's, you know, minding their business, walking through the village, and then Rover comes bouncing down, and when they hear the Rover yell, everybody stops and moves to the side of the road like a cop's coming through.
Yes.
And I really liked it because it's not a fear reaction. It's like I don't know if I would call it respect, but it's like you would do with a cop.
Oh, I thought it was just the, I thought it was a callback to the pilot because when a Rover appears, everyone freezes.
You know, yeah. I didn't think about it that way. It's very possible because if this episode was written after,
right after that,
they could, you know, but I, the way I read it anyway was, everybody moves to the side like the drill sergeant's coming through and
stand at
attention.
Yep.
And this chess master stands out to number six because he's the only person who just does not pay attention.
He just keeps walking. Yeah.
And I really liked his character because when he and Six start talking, you kind of get the sense that this guy is who Six will be. They have a very kind of...
Yeah, similar attitude.
Yeah, similar attitude. They can talk in the same weird chess metaphors.
Yes.
Another good detail is how the chessboard, the human chessboard, is not delineated by colors because...
In terms of the sides?
Yeah,
you mean?
In terms of the sides in the game.
They're wearing like little flags, aren't they? Are they carrying flags?
They're holding peace flags, like what piece they are.
Oh.
But there's no color delineation because that goes into their, you know, figuring out who the blacks and the whites thing are.
Right, yep.
Because it, you know, they're saying it basically. It doesn't matter what side, you know, that kind of thing. You can tell. That's the jumping off point for the whole metaphor of the episode, which is you can tell who's who by the way they act.
Right. Yeah. I didn't pick that up, but yeah, that makes sense.
But yeah,
it's a very confusing way to play chess.
Yeah. well, when you're a count who's playing chess with human pieces.
Yeah, and obviously has been playing for decades at this point.
And can just yell out. But like, if I was, I wouldn't know what to do because if he's like. Rooks to queen seven, and I was the rook. I'm like, I don't know what that means.
I thought you needed more information when those things, like in the newspapers, whenever they do like the chess game of the day, like when you move a piece, I feel like you have to identify which rook is going to which queen's space? Because they were just saying, yeah, like rook to queen seven. It's like, maybe I'm just ignorant to this, but I feel like you need more chess information.
It's very, well, if you're playing on Bobby Fischer level, maybe not.
Well, I mean, Six was at some point. He was playing the newspaper game, like where he was scribbling on the thing.
Well, he was just writing words. He was filling in a crossword puzzle.
And staring down people to make them so uncomfortable that they left. It's just like, he's figured it out. Figured out who's there.
But I really liked the chess master character. I wish the episode had been more about Six and him interacting. Because after that initial back and forth, he just kind of falls to the... I mean, he's there, but he kind of falls to the back.
Yeah, he sets a plot
until he and everybody else that helps Six is apparently lobotomized at the end of the episode.
Yes.
That was what I took away from the question that he asked anyway.
Well, yeah, because he... Right, and number two tells them that like they'll be dealing with them or whatever. At the very end, he says that don't worry about them. We'll handle
it. They'll all be pawns. Or
something. Yeah. And the nice little touch of the butler puts the final pawn back on the board.
Right.
And it's I think they could have done a more clear job of showing that Rover is pushing the boat back.
Yeah, I actually didn't pick. Yeah, it's. Yeah, you're right. I didn't think about that at all. Actually. Yeah. I really like the way they use him in this episode, though, because he's
he's got balls.
Yeah, he's got two giant balls down by his crotch area that he can drag people with. I like the way he's used in this because they treat him with like an air of importance, because like that opening scene, and also number two doesn't just call for Rover right away.
Right.
It's like a last resort kind of thing. And when he does, the process, which in the past has been very quick, it's just like, you know, blah, 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 and there he is.
Right.
Bouncing along. It's a lot more drawn out. And you can kind of see like whatever the goop is that is supposed to be creating him kind of moving around.
Yeah.
And forming. And
another early thing. It's like it's going into detail of like this is how Rover comes into existence and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, I didn't mind his use here. Wasn't totally over the top, and you know, it provides you with the out to get him back at the end. Like, it basically allows you to bring Six back to the village.
Mm. Cat.
Dog.
Rain.
Shine.
Desk.
Work.
Hope.
Anchor.
Anchor?
The hope and anchor is a pub I used to drink at.
Tree.
Leaf.
Home.
Away.
Return.
Game.
Love.
Game.
Game.
Tennis.
Table.
Chair.
Ship.
Shape.
Red.
Sails.
Free.
For all.
The one bit that I did actually really like, that felt more like what the show ended up being, is that that word association thing scene when they bring six does something and they're like, well, we should bring him in for some testing.
Yeah,
and they go through a bunch of testing and determine that has no regard for self preservation, but doesn't like pain. which is a really weird diagnosis.
It's it doesn't like pain. It's a real 60s medical examination. I like that he mentions free for all,
right,
which is an episode title.
And he kind of does it with like a wry.
Yeah, yeah. I thought it was maybe the funniest thing that the show's done, just with that sort of rapid fire ping ponging, because where he flips the script around a little bit, like she says game or something, mm-hmm. or he says game, and then she goes game, and he goes tennis.
Yeah.
I thought that
piece I really enjoyed, because that feels more like what the show ends up being.
Right, yeah.
Instead of the nurse scientist talking about chopping people's brains.
Yeah, I wish I had written it down, because a lot of those weird word associations were funny. And not a very good doctor to be like judgy of what you're saying in the test. Be like,
well,
really?
I mean, you get a little bit of well, I don't know if you know what you call it, backstory, but when she says hope, he says anchor, and she's like, what? It's like, oh, the hope and anchor. It's a pub I used to drink. Don't worry about it.
The hope and anchor. It's a great, great pub. You shouldn't be responding to what the patients are saying. It's absurd. Interesting. Yeah, it was I didn't mind that. That seemed so bad, but I do sort of totally agree with what you're saying, is that it's a, it feels like someone took the pilot, tried to make it more normal mm-hmm. of a TV show,
yeah.
and then was not given a lot of information about what the show should be. So it's just like, I'll redo some of the stuff from the first episode and just sort of flesh it out a little bit.
What have I done?
Why did you run?
don't know.
Running is a sign of resistance.
No.
The will to escape.
No, no. Believe me, I didn't think.
It was instinctive?
Yeah, yeah. No. Anything you say.
Your thoughts interest me.
So, you said earlier that you liked how you got to see a little bit more of the people of the village and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
How did you feel about getting so much backstory on the prisoners? So, like, when Six takes the Rook aside and starts questioning him, you learn that the Rook was, like, an inventor who created this renewable energy system that he tried to give to every country in the world.
Was it renewable energy?
I'm sorry, no.
It was like a missile defense system.
Missile defense.
Yeah, okay. All right, sorry. Yeah.
That he tried to give to the entire world. But then, so they sent him to the village, but the irony of it being that it ended up getting stolen anyway.
Right, yeah.
And you learn that the chess master's account. How did you feel about that?
I thought it was good.
Yeah.
And I wish the show did more of that.
Mm.
Or it doesn't have to do more of it, but this episode should have been the second or third episode in the series.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because that clarifies that the show actually is a prison, you know, which this episode keeps hammering home because it's like, these are prisoners, these are guards, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Before that, it didn't feel like as much of a prison as it felt like one guy is just sort of in this weird situation and he's the only prisoner.
Mm-hmm.
For it to be a prison, I feel like you need more people in there. Mm-hmm. And I thought that I like the fact here that these people all have backstories. Ironically, like, even if they don't do anything wrong, they still get put there just because the village or whatever the conspiracy organization thinks that they belong there.
Mm-hmm.
Is. So I liked it. And I like whenever the show can ground itself, I think I probably have the different opinion from you. I like it when it does it a little bit to give me a little bit of understanding what's going on.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I think it's a very narrow line to walk with that stuff. Because what makes me hesitate from saying that I like that is one of if not the most annoying thing to me on The Walking Dead,
mm-hmm.
is, or in general, I hate it when they do this shows or movies, but The Walking Dead does a lot, where you have a character, you get backstory or something on a character by having them tell you a story about their past.
Right.
You
yeah.
know, like
via flashback.
Yeah. No. Not even flashback. Like they just tell
talk.
You.
Yeah.
Like there was an episode of The Walking Dead a few weeks ago that blew my mind, because back to back two scenes had characters going, you know, when I was a kid, my father took me down to the fishing hole. Like, that kind of story. And it's like, ugh.
Yeah.
It's such a hacky way to get across, you know,
motivations and stuff.
Yeah. So, or like to make a point.
Right.
And I feel like you walk a very fine line in the show like this, where you have a danger of it turning into every episode. So how did you end it? You know, like, what did you do before the war kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. I think that just ties into I don't understand how the BBC or whoever produced this would expect you could make 30 episodes out of this,
yeah.
because there's no way there's only one story here, and they've so far told it in like three or four different ways.
Yeah.
And we're now starting to hit episodes where the story is being retold.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's that problem. Like, if this was the only episode that did it, I'd be fine with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the episodes after this, everyone kind of goes back to their, you don't really learn a lot about a lot of them. A lot of them are just kind of weird and like, hello, number six, welcome to the village. I just like the glimpse.
Yeah.
And if it had kept doing it, I'm sure it would have been obnoxious as hell.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I like the glimpse. But,
yeah. I think because the only other one I can think of is the Estonian.
Oh, yeah.
She
yeah.
kind of does that where yeah. she's like, well, this is my story.
Yeah, I like the glimpse. And I also like that if you take this episode and Dance of the Dead and put them early on,
yep.
You get to see a lot of relatable elements paired away.
Right.
So
yeah.
You've got Six there in a place where, you know, as we were talking about last week, he has the observer that they carried over from the first episode, that concept. But by the end of that, they've pared that away.
Right.
So because he's technically dead, so dead people don't need to be followed.
Right.
And you've got, in this episode, you've got other people there that he can talk to and possibly empathize with, or who will empathize with or sympathize with him.
Yep.
And that's pared away because he's determined to be so independently minded that his attitude has an air of authority.
Right. It scares off people.
Right. Which is really interesting if you look at it that way.
Yep.
So getting a little bit of a glimpse of humanity from those people and then pulling that back and then making it, you know, even sharper just about how is this guy going to deal with this.
Right.
In this ever increasingly solitary confinement.
Right.
In a group of, you know, it's the old saying of even in a crowd of people, I'm alone kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing is really interesting that they decide to, if you view it in that order, you can see that being cut back.
Right, yeah.
The other way to handle it, I was just thinking about this now, was how would you feel if they did it, this is sort of an inversion of the entire concept, but I was thinking about, like, oh, so let's say they wanted to do the show again, independent of the remake that they already did.
Right.
How would you feel if they did it more like Orange is the New Black, where you meet these other prisoners and you get actual legit backstories for these prisoners?
So, yeah, that'd be...
And so then through the course of the series, so you can kind of empathize with these other characters, but then when they're paired away, then when you kind of focus the story on the six, it becomes even more pronounced.
Yeah. Yep. No, yeah, they could definitely do that. I'm just thinking technically that might be a problem because it would make you sort of wonder why people aren't working together. You'd have to fix that issue of, like, all these people are obviously driven by the same goal. Why can't they just get together at a certain point? But that would be kind of cool if you... does this show have an episode that does not focus on Six? Is, like, anyone else a central figure? Probably not, I would think.
Not really.
Unless you do it real late.
There's an episode... There's an episode where coming up where he is kind of like a secondary character to the plot.
Yep.
But you're seeing it through his eyes. So it's right. It's not like other stuff. It's not like those episodes where the lead actor needs a day off.
Right.
So
yeah.
On Miami Vice, they focus on Zito and Swiatek.
Yeah.
And then they just have Crockett and Tubbs being like, hey, you want to go get a beer? It's like, yeah, we'll be back in 40 minutes.
It's not 42 minutes with Cameron.
They don't really, as far as I can remember, they don't really have an episode like that.
Yeah, I would imagine that wouldn't really work with this show. But, I mean, they could do something like that. It's always worth mixing up the sort of tendencies for what it would be. But I think you just have to avoid that issue of too many people have the same goals. Why is everyone... The village at that point would have to be, like, wildly competent.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
To sort of, like, stomp out everybody.
Yeah.
Enjoy your chess yesterday.
Don't tell me you care.
Well, of course. We want you to be happy.
Fine. Just give me a one-way ticket home.
Won't you ever give up?
What do you think?
So, we talked about a little bit the placement in the series. So are we in agreement that this probably should be an earlier episode?
Yeah, this is the third episode.
Yeah.
It goes Arrival, Dance of Dead, this one.
Okay.
That's the three. Everyone seems to think that Free for All belongs early, and I don't think that Free for All belongs early.
I don't think so either. Or at least, I mean, there's a lot of people that want Free for All as number two.
Doesn't make sense as number two.
I don't
two.
Think it makes sense at all.
No.
Because that's something, I mean, I wouldn't put it deep into the run.
It could go after this one.
Yeah.
You know, he needs to have been there, tried a couple of times, and they're like, hey, now you can run for office. And like, he needs to be trying a different tact to get out of the village.
Yeah.
And so you need the pilot, two escape episodes, mm-hmm. essentially. Mm-hmm. He realizes he can't do anything. And then Free for All.
Yeah.
And then you can have your ending episodes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm. I was just surprised. A lot of the people in orders that I were reading are like, Free for All, number two. It's like, no, that's not right.
I think the AV Club has Checkmate as number two.
Could be, but I think it feeds off of Dance of the Dead better.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm just trying to think now. It could be number two and then Dance of the Dead, maybe afterwards. Either one of those I think is fine.
You know, honestly, I think I would put Dance of the Dead after this one.
Yeah, maybe that does make more
sense. Mainly because the thrust of Dance of the Dead has a lot to do with his buddy that he meets.
Right, yeah.
And who ends up being lobotomized and then having Six's identity taken away from, you know, his life, basically.
Yep.
So I feel like that thematically and structurally feels like it would fit after this one, because you take away the people, the new people of the village that he might be able to...
Oh, yeah, I guess that's true. And then he's stuck with a friend.
And then you give him a piece of his old life that he thinks he can grab onto, and you take away that, too.
Yeah. No, that's a good point.
But yeah, I think it's definitely Free For All being number two. I don't know. It's just
all right.
Yeah,
it's incorrect.
I mean, you know, it's so cool that you can. This basically has an open source watchability order. Watch order.
Yeah, it's us.
You only have yourself to blame.
How do you make that out?
I gather you avoided selecting guardians by detecting their subconscious arrogance. There was one thing you overlooked.
What was that?
Rook applied to you your own tests. When you took command of this little venture, your air of authority convinced him that you were one of us.
And he convinced the others.
So, I guess this is... We can't really rate the plan in this one, because, like we said, number two is so blasé about the entire thing.
He is. I don't
he's
even...
Too busy. He's too busy chopping wood with his hands.
Well, it's one of two things. He's either got a terrible plot, or it's so good that he doesn't even need to do anything. Like, it's just like, it's so such a well-oiled machine that he can just karate chop things and, like, hang out in his spare time.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah, the plot unravels only because the Rook gives him up, gives up number six.
Yeah, oh, yeah, that's true. So I guess I'd have to lean towards the side of this is not a Wella.
Yeah.
He seems like he's, like, a temp number two. Like he's just like, where
well,
do I
technically they're all temps,
right? Exactly.
So quickly,
where do I put the forms? And he's just kind of hanging out, and it's like, oh, is that what you guys do? That's cool. All right, I'll be doing something else. Yeah, I'd on a scale of 1 to 6, I'd give him a 2. It ultimately works out, but I liked the actor and everything. It's just he's just kind of there.
Yeah, as far as the plan goes, I'd probably go a 1.
Yeah,
just
1.
Because it's the fact that it works out at all has nothing to do with him.
Right, yeah.
We have ways. If you drive us to them.
I can imagine.
It's all done under the strictest medical supervision.
I can guess that from the state of the man you took yesterday.
The Rook? Oh, no, he'll come to no harm. It's just a rehabilitation course.
But yeah, I think that's pretty much it for this episode. Yeah, I mean, for me, it...
Final thoughts.
You know, I don't hate it. I noticed last night when I was watching it, I remember the least about this episode than I do any of the other ones.
Oh,
I
really?
Think it's because I probably watched this episode the least.
Yeah.
Just because, I mean, I was, you know, I don't know. After the chess scene, when they have that nice, he and the chess master have that nice back and, you know, metaphorical chess back and forth thing.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay. I completely forgot about it. I mean, most of that episode, I completely forgot. I had no idea.
Yeah, well, it's a little bit... the first bit is definitely the most memorable, just because of the chess scene and his conversation with that guy. And then it just sort of becomes, like we were saying, a retread of previous things that you're kind of like, is that that episode or is that the other one where he got on a boat? Like, is it one of those two?
I found a lot of it kind of boring.
Yeah, know? That's funny because I liked this one the first time I watched it. Like, I immediately sort of... felt comfortable with it, and that was good. And it's, I tend to have a sort of soft spot for more traditional, where I can sort of feel grounded. And I liked that what this was doing. I agree, it goes a little bit too far, and it makes the village look sort of incompetent, which I don't think is a good look for the show.
Yeah.
So that's probably the biggest problem with it. But as in terms of plot, this is the first episode I think where I didn't. This will sound more insulting than I wanted to be, but I didn't check my phone. Like when I'm watching anything, I'm always like, how long has this episode been going? And like, you look at it and you're like, oh, like we were laughing before about, like the original series Star Trek, even the best original series Star Trek episodes feel like they're 3 hours long.
Yes.
Like they are so slow.
Yeah.
And
a lot of them, the most memorable parts are not that much of the episode.
Yeah. Yeah, it's,
like what we were talking, City on the Edge of Forever, they don't go back in time for like
halfway
minutes.
Through the episode. Yeah, it's a ridiculous amount of time where they're just sort of looking at the gateway and it's like, someone do something. But it's that kind of thing where And you do it. I do it for modern shows just because I'm either enjoying it. And I'm like, oh, when's like I don't want the episode to end. How right. fast or how much plot can they wrap up in this time? This is the first one the plot sort of carried the episode through.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like other ones have had like either sections where I feel like shouldn't it be ending now? And you look at it, and it's only been 35 minutes. And you're like, oh no, there's still 10, 15 minutes left here. Mm-hmm. This one, the pacing felt appropriate.
Yeah, yeah. I would give you that. Yeah, it doesn't feel. I don't think it particularly drags pace wise, but just content wise, it wasn't really.
Yeah, good. It's kind of silly. Yeah. A little bit of
the other, I just thought of something you were talking about before about how number two in that little bit of karate scene feels like they could have done more with it. And also him being on, you said you wish he had been on the boat, which is where we get this week's
gratuitous.
Yeah, absolutely. But, well, there's also gratuitous when they climb the bell tower. They sneak up on them.
Yeah.
And then they just duke it out instead of knocking them out. And that fight scene goes on for, it's not a real long time, but it's like, really? Why is it still going? I thought they were just going to knock them out.
But it made me think, I don't think they ever explore a number two who defeats number six on a physical level. So
no,
it's always like, mind games and stuff. But number six has proven to be someone who values his own physical prowess as well, as we learned in Schizoid Man.
Yeah.
It would have been interesting to have like have a number two who was kind of like Bane.
Number six. I was actually just thinking, you think that you are on the village.
When you tell me why you resigned, then you have.
When you speak of number one, he shall appear.
But you know what I mean, though. Like a guy.
Right, who's actually physically imposing enough to like back up what he's, because he's never even taken a swing at number two. Which you think at a certain point you'd just be like, the new number two would appear, and you'd just be like, I'm just gonna get this out of the way and just deck him in the face.
Or just like as a change of pace to take number six off his game. If number six is like back talking, number two just like pops him in the mouth. Like they never really address that level of personal destruction. Not that I can remember anyway.
What if I were to take your scarf? That would be very painful for you. I think I was actually thinking that. It was like, I think they could have gone more crazy with the twos. So that they're all smug bureaucrats.
Yep.
And that seems, they all have like minor differences. Like one like milk, one plays karate. I feel like they could have maybe have like a crazy one. Now it seems like we're just doing Batman villain retreads, but like
one who like really liked riddles,
one who fell in acid and burned half his face would be great. But
what if there was one that had like a smile all the time,
a small bird like one. I mean anything, but I do feel like they could have just had one, just to the fighter or the one who's like unstable or the one who is sort of. In his face a little bit more, because they're all sort of feeling a little bit similar at this point.
Yeah, they all have their differences, but they're very kind of like subtle differences.
Yeah,
like
right.
I actually
or unimportant to the plot.
Yeah, I was rewatching Schizoid Man actually, and I felt like the number two in that episode is very similar to number two in this one, where this guy is like kind of hip.
Yeah, that guy's more of a prep school.
Yeah, but they have that sort of same kind of blasé, vibe going
they're sort
on.
Of amused by the situation. They're playing it as if it's very entertaining to them. What's going on
now? If this number two was like anytime they called him, they cut to the circle room and clearly he had just been hotboxing the thing. He's like, yeah, I'll take your.
I'll be right over there. Oh boy.
That's
what I thought. I thought he was. I didn't realize he was doing karate when they first show, because they don't show the board. I thought he was...
He's focusing very intently. I thought he was like really mad or something.
I thought he was meditating or like smoking or had incense going, because he's sitting there very zoned out and it's like he doesn't seem concerned. And then he gets very angry, chops the board and stands up, and that's the end of it. But no, I think that's something that...
You use the village to your advantage. I was born there.
Start duking it out. And I was just disappointed he didn't fight six. I feel like that should have happened. It didn't, but...
I wish there was one that tried to face him on a physical level, but unfortunately, we won't have seen that.
That's too bad. But yeah, good episode, though. I like that one.
Yeah, it's probably my least favorite so far, but it's got a lot of good stuff in it.
Yeah, definitely not my least favorite.
Yeah. You stole Arrival or?
No. It's the
general,
one.
The general.
Right? I didn't like the general. Yeah, yeah. And I feel like there was. The general has the professor's wife.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Right.
But yeah, that's pretty much it. And I was actually wrong. This is episode number 8.
Oh, okay.
Next week, episode number 9 will be Hammer into Anvil, which is a good one.
Yeah, it's a good title.
It's the one that follows up with Thorpe, the actor who plays Thorpe from Many Happy Returns,
mm-hmm.
is playing number 2 next week. So again, like I said, they don't explicitly mention that, but you can kind of it's fun to kind of read that into it,
hmm.
into what happens.
And number 6 displaces a vertebrae and gets punched in the back and fixes it by a Tibetan monk. It's all coming together.
Number 2 has an atomic bomb that's going to go off in 5 months unless number 6 can fly it 5 miles out into the ocean.
Looking forward to it.
And somehow not get a that's a whole other podcast, but we can talk about that.
Who are you?
I'm Gotham's Reckoning. Here to end the borrowed time you've all been living on.
But, yeah, that's about it. Anything you want to plug?
Sure. You guys go to backinthevillage.com. There's some links up there now. You can go to the Penske podcast, which is the Star Trek podcast that we're running through, and Penske File also. There's like a gaming blog. You can go there if you like games.
And as I've said many times before, I'm by no means an expert, so if you have anything you'd like to, any trivia you'd like to send me, like Jonathan and TK were nice enough to do this past week.
Yep. Yeah, much appreciated. Thank you for sending me emails.
I highly encourage comments and feedback because, you know, talking about the show is my favorite part. This is why I'm doing this.
Yeah, you have to shift my you have the opportunity to mold my opinion because we're wrapping up the show, and if someone writes some thesis that could sway me either way, it'd be
that's true. So next week I want 500 words on why the general should be
the greatest
favorite episode.
If anyone can write that essay, we'll let you go to 1,000 words. You might need it, but
you know, actually, there's a girl who follows us on Twitter, named Hannah,
mm-hmm.
who is doing a watch through. I think she's paced about the same as we are.
Yeah,
and she is doing a blog. She's writing blog.
Oh, actually, writing it out
analysis. So
taking the hard road.
I'm going to put this on her shoulders. If she wants to write up why the general is great, we'd be happy to forward it to Wes.
Yeah, absolutely. I will read it, and then I will tear it apart. Nope, thank you. Thank you guys very much for everything. Thank you for listening.
Yeah, thank you. We'll see you next week with Cameron and Bill. So that was Checkmate. Hope you enjoyed it. Again, we are now on iTunes, so if you are so inclined, you can leave us a great review, which would be awesome. Thanks for listening, and again, no show next week. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Bye.
No one cared who I was till I put on the mask.
If I pull that off, will you die?
It would be extremely painful.
You're a big guy.
For you.